Welcome to the Steven Universe podcast, the official fan podcast of Cartoon Network's Steven Universe. My name is Mackenzie Atwood. I'm going to be your host, and I'm a huge fan of Steven Universe. I was asked to come out to Burbank, California this summer and get the chance to talk with the crew themselves one-on-one and get the chance to look behind the scenes of Steven Universe and break it down for everyone. So this summer, we're going to be coming at you from the Steven Universe writer's room where the magic happens and interviewing all kinds of guests. We're going to be talking to storyboard artists, designers, musicians, and of course, since it's episode one, I have here with me today Rebecca Sugar and Steven Sugar. Rebecca Sugar is the creator of Steven Universe, and Steven Sugar is her brother who inspired the main character and also works as a background artist on the show. Thank you guys so much for being here today. All right, guys, let's jump right into it. So what were you guys like when you were growing up? Like, what kind of shows did you watch and what were you into?
Oh my gosh! Well, we played a lot of video games together. I think when we were younger, I was the one playing them. At a certain point, I started just drawing all the time. Then I'd be watching you play video games. It was like I loved Yoshi's Island, and then when Ocarina of Time came out, that's like all we were doing for a while. And show, I mean, we watched a lot of anime. We watched a lot of cartoons together. We had like a tradition of like watching Detective Conan and eating these off-brand goldfish.
Yeah, we would record the night before on Adult Swim, and then after school the next day we would watch an episode.
Yeah, it was like this ritual. Yeah, when I was like a senior in high school, we'd like eat dolphins and friends and watch Detective Conan. I don't know. We watched Utena together. That was big.
I still didn't watch that.
I mean, I think
on our bootleg One Piece DVDs.
Yeah. I had these One Piece DVDs that had these just typo-riddled subtitles that barely made sense. But it was kind of like piecing together a puzzle. Because like certain words would actually be other words, and everyone's names would be different. They called Usopp Liar Boo. And sometimes Luffy was just Roof. And they would. I don't want to like complain about these. It was great. I mean, I was obsessed with One Piece.
It adds another layer of like interaction when you have to figure out what's going on. You know.
Yeah, there was a whole arc where they were trying to ring a bell, but instead of ring, they said null, and instead of bell, they said clock. So like, we have to null the clock, and I was like, what does that mean? I think anyway, it was something like that. This was a long time ago. It was like a whole another level trying to figure out what it meant. Well, I should have just been reading the comics, which is what I eventually did. I got impatient and I switched to the comics.
Yeah,
it sort of showed up a lot in the show. I think the influence from anime. You guys have talked about that a lot too, and video games too. How do you think the show would be different if you didn't have those influences? Like, what do you think it would look like?
To me, the core of the show is like the feeling of us growing up together. So I think if those weren't our influences, whatever they were would be what the show is and feels like. Hopefully it would still, as long as we were being excited about something, it would probably still have that end-to-end feeling sort of at home. It would probably still have a similar feeling, but a lot of different kind of paraphernalia, a different kind of prestige.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a couple of siblings too. And so we grew up together and we were always, we did everything together, so like I totally understand the impact. Like, what do you guys think that like individually would be different if you guys weren't siblings? You know,
it's really hard to imagine.
Yeah.
I know it's tough. Like, I feel like there's just stuff that I learned, you know, from like I feel like one of my siblings taught me a lot about compassion, you know, and the other one taught me like about being spontaneous or something. So like, do you guys have anything like that?
Well, I think growing up, I would always look to Rebecca's art when I was trying to draw, and I would take a lot from what she was learning, and we'd sort of collaborate a lot and share our thoughts and critiques and that kind of thing. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know if I would have continued to pursue art nearly as much as I did if I didn't have some sibling support going forward with that.
Right.
Yeah. I was really excited when you were like getting into comics and drawing and stuff. What is it? There was some story. It was like, because you were obsessed with trains when you were little.
I was.
It was like, you're really into trains, and then you were starting to draw, and we all thought your first drawing would be a train, and then it was like an apple tree.
I don't remember that.
We were like, oh, that's nice,
What I remember is, I really like trains. Then I saw Back to the Future 3, and I thought, oh, that train exploded. That's really cool. And then I started getting into science fiction. I think that was sort of the turning point for me. It was trains, Back to the Future 3, and then Star Wars. And then for a long time,
trains were
I was just like copying drawings of Star Wars ships.
Yes. Yeah, you're super good at that. I think our thing was sort of, Steven's really good at drawing ships and drawing sort of like architectural everything, and then I was drawing a lot of characters.
Well, that's exactly how it ended up.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's still what we do.
Yeah, that's awesome. So like when you were making the show, they approach you, you're working on Adventure Time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they are just like, will you just pitch a show to us? Was it your first thought? You were like, making it about Steven, like just centering it around that idea of like growing up with your brother? Like, was that the...
Yeah, that was... Well, I mean, having worked on Adventure Time, I knew just how big something like this could become.
Mm-hmm.
And how many years and years and years and how much love and energy I might end up pouring into this project if it actually happens. So I was like, it's got to be something that I really care about. And I knew I wanted it to be personal. I think I sort of learned from Adventure Time, they're really encouraging when it came to putting a lot of myself in the stuff that I was boarding and being honest about it and sort of treating it like poetry instead of like a commercial cartoon, which really stunned me because I had been studying and really wanting to do something that was very commercial. And then now that I was there, it was like, you know, oh, be honest, like, what do you want to do with this world and these characters that's really coming from you? And I'm sort of like, oh, I don't know. So I was really starting to think about that. So with all that in my mind going into this, I thought, you know, I want to do something that I could never get sick of working on, you know, that I would always love to work on. And I'd been doodling pictures of Steven since we were little kids, some kinder than others, really. mostly they're cute. And I did animations of you.
Yeah, you had that student film mm-hmm. with me and Franz in it. And then there was that comic idea you had.
I still think about that. I didn't. Like, we haven't talked about this in years.
Something about it's like turtlenecks or something.
I was thinking about turtlenecks. Okay, wait, no, I've been thinking about this because it's feels relevant again.
Because it had something to do with a character that was based on me, and there was some magic element.
It was some sort of like academy where you would go and this. I have not said this out loud, and it's weird because I've been thinking about this a lot and I haven't been talking about it. I had some comic idea where it was like some sort of academy where you would go and study how to like channel your internal power, and mainly the thrust of it was that it had to come from some sort of extreme confidence in knowing some sort of truth and being right about something. And then the main character who was going to be you or based on you, the thought would be that they weren't really sure what was or wasn't right. And then they end up drawing all of their strength and power from confidently being able to say, you can never really know anything for sure. And being so sure of that, that it actually imbued him with incredible power. Because I think it's really the only thing that you can actually be completely sure of, probably.
It's like the only absolute truth or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an old idea. I never even... And there was some guy who was like... One of the characters was just like, I think turtlenecks are great, and they're coming back. and that was where they drew all of their strength. That was like the turtleneck thing. And then other people would be like, no, but he was just so sure that it would create an explosive power.
But it's still like... It shows some of the stuff that came into the Steven Universe. That's what I'm hearing is like you're talking about like powers that stem from emotions, right? And mm-hmm. and just the core of, you know, Steven, right? Like that's what I'm hearing is that's really cool. And it seems like it'd be tough to develop like an idea. I get why you would start with Steven. Like I think that's awesome. But like, you know, thinking from that and then going all the way to what's, you know, all this backstory and lore about like the gems and everything. And it's like, how do you start with something personal and like develop it out to, you know, this big crazy world that you have created?
Well, starting from Steven, from there, I sort of branched out to just pulling together a pastiche of everything we sort of absorbed together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was drawing a lot from the games that we played. So like Ocarina of Time, the visual style is very Yoshi's Island inspired too. And there's like a sort of Mario component to Steven. We were Nintendo kids. And then just the books that I was reading and the shows that we were watching and, you know, but also always sort of coming down to, I think the thing about it is like we were into all of this sort of escapist stuff, but at the end of the day, you know, we were still really good friends. So even though we were enjoying all of that stuff, it wasn't like I didn't have to feel like I was sort of running away from my own life at home, which I also really liked. I think that's so it's sort of like pulling together just that stuff, but then grounding it in the fact that we were watching it together, we were playing it together, that's sort of the feeling I wanted, that would connect all of those disparate ideas. And then when the crew got bigger, I started looking to them too, to just be like, you know, what were you into? What did you like? Mm-hmm. Why did you like it? What was it sort of, why was it filling this need for you when you were that age? And what was it making you realize that you hadn't thought of without this catalyst, you know? So it's like keeping all of those pastiche elements, like grounding them always in something that made them personal to us, figuring out what that was, why it resonated in that way, and then reinterpreting it where that's just already built in, that's already a part of it for the characters and who they are.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm so excited to have you guys here. And we still have to talk about, I want to talk about more of how the show developed and want to get back to that right after this. Guys, we're back. We're here with still here with Rebecca and Steven. And the one thing I want to ask is, like, some of the most helpful pieces of advice you got from people during development when you were creating. We talked about you creating this idea stemming out from Steven. Like, what did people contribute to that, like, in the early stages?
Oh my gosh. Well, right around the time I was starting to work on it, I worked briefly on Hotel Transylvania, and I got a chance to talk with Genndy Tartakovsky, and he gave me a bunch of really excellent advice. And at that point, the idea was a lot more complicated. There was, it used to be that the gems would sort of disguise themselves when they went to walk around in town. They had this sort of double life where they would be sort of turn into their gem selves.
Gotcha.
There would be more like a transformation element to it, which is, of course, a sort of magical girl staple. And all this other noodly stuff about their relationship with, like, local government and things that sort of have massaged their way back into the show, like, but we kind of, you know, it's not built into the premise where it's, you know, where it's super important or anything. But I think the thing that talking to him really changed is that he was like, boil this down, simplify this. Like, you know, if the point is that they're incredible and he's trying to catch up with them, then that is the thrust of the show. And early on, that was a big part of it, and that was very simple. And it's sort of, I think that because I learned from him to really simplify it, it allowed us to grow to that place where it was so complex without starting there, which I think I was ready to kind of start there. But I think you really need to put one stone down at a time to walk across it. That just really helped my thinking. I also had just an awesome talk with Mike Mignola of Hellboy. Gave me some great advice early on. I'd seen him at conventions, and one of the things that I used to do is, I'm from independent comics, so I would print out my comics and bring them to small conventions, and I met a lot of comic artists that way. And so I knew Mike Mignola a little bit. That's also how I met Eric Powell, who gave me my first job in comics. He does a comic called The Goon, which I just love. So Mike Mignola invited me over to his studio. I was sort of stunned, and I came by. He was working on Hellboy in Hell. Can I say Hell? Because I just said it several times. And he handed me these pages of Hellboy in Hell in progress. I was just like shaking, like, oh, there's beautiful.
Right.
And I was asking, because he knows so much about mythology. Well, first off, I wanted to know, like, how do you make these little pieces of symbolism feel like they have so much gravity? And he was just talking about just repeating imagery and having it, you know, like a certain flower, which means a certain thing, you know, seeing it growing, seeing it on a wall, like understanding that it has this presence, that it has this relevance. And I was talking to him about the show. I think one of the first things he said when I described to him what the show was going to be like, he was like, oh, would they really make this? I'm like, I don't know. But I'm going to try. And I was like, I want to have a lot of sort of goddess-related imagery and have this feeling that there's this incredible power behind these characters. And I want to know how to, like, pull from things that already feel like they have this weight and this power. Like, I want to know more about mythology. And he pulled out this huge book, set it down and opened it up. And he's like, well, what you want is Ishtar. She's the goddess of pretty much everything. And he opens up this book to this chapter about Ishtar. And a lot of, I think at this point, Steven didn't even have a star on his shirt. And the thing about Ishtar is that she relates to war and love and passion and just everything.
Really everything.
Really everything. She has a star for a crown. She rides in a chariot pulled by 7 lions. So lion imagery and star imagery. She relates to like the taming of beasts in a way that's sort of both positive and negative. It's really interesting. And a lot of imagery came from that. A lot of the star imagery and lion imagery. Although some of that was already there because I have a cat named Lion. So there was always going to be like lions. But I think it was sort of exciting to be like, oh. And then we have stuff later in the show. It's like 7 lions. Anyway, it's
because I remember that. Yeah, that's sort of the... It all started with Ishtar. There's you. That's awesome.
Yeah. So after talking with him, I started just experimenting with drawing a lot of symbols and trying to pull symbolism that we'd just repeat often enough and imbue with meaning. I started to think about that a lot. And you've done a ton of that in the world building of the show, Stephen.
Yeah, I think once we started really developing, especially the gem locations, it became a sort of chain reaction of we had this source material of what you had created for the pilot and for sort of the show Bible in our early, where we knew the show was going. And then we had a whole crew, so once we were working with Kevin Dart when he was art directing, and we had our background staff and our paint staff, and it was a lot of sort of collaboration of trying to achieve certain feelings, and I think that kind of, every step led to another of finding certain architecture and certain imagery that just seemed to work with what you had set down at the beginning. And, I think for that first season especially, it was like just pushing that as far as we could until we started approaching more of the gem lore and homeworld and all that kind of stuff when we started integrating our own new symbols into it.
Right. Yeah, I know you have a lot of theories about their language, and Sam invented some of it too. Right?
Yeah, it started with Sam Bosma's gem language at the original Sword Arena. Which we then adapted when we redesigned the arena. And that sort of has gone off in its own direction to lay groundwork, for their language and their symbols and all the way that works.
Yeah, I know all your theories. You can tell, like, which area of the kindergartens on Homeworld, like, who they belong to. It's written on the walls.
Yeah.
If you know how to read it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
I'll never tell.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of people, like, theorizing about it, and it's like, oh, these crazy people looking at these symbols on the wall, but it's real. It's real.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's so cool. I figured that we always see everything from Steven's perspective, and Steven doesn't understand gem language.
Right.
So the audience can't, because if the audience could understand the gem language, then they would understand something that Steven doesn't, and that would break
that's
part of the show. So there is a theory behind how it works, but it has to be...
Right. We'll just do a Muzzy... Let's just do a whole educational episode where we teach Steven to read
gem language.
I
think that's one of the coolest parts of the show to me is that's what got me into it. I think a lot is that it starts out as it just totally makes sense the way that it develops the world building, because like you said, it's from Steven's perspective, and as it goes on, Steven's learning more and the audience is learning with him. It just makes Steven that much more relatable as a character to, I think, a whole wide audience. I think I told you my grandma started watching Steven Universe, and she has like her notebook full of the lore and stuff, and she's like got a list of the homeworld gems and everything, and it's pretty great. So what do you guys think when you see these like fan theories and stuff like that about the show? What do you guys, are you guys like, ooh? I don't know, what do you think?
I mean, well, sometimes I'm like, oh, they're right.
Yeah.
I won't say when, but it was really fun early on with all the Garnets of Fusion theories, because there's a ton of evidence.
Right.
We wanted there to be a ton of evidence. I actually drew in Fusion Cuisine when you see them, their silhouettes for a second. I drew that in frame. Yeah, it was really fun because people found it, but they didn't know what was like Sapphire's hair. They were just like,
happening?
This is some sort of shape. And yeah, Ruby's, I think some people thought Ruby's headband was sort of like teeny little like arms that were happening, or it was clearly something. I've been thinking about thingness a lot, when you can tell something is like a thing,
but you can't tell what the thing
is. But you know because it's just it's full of thingness,
right?
So the fun thing for me about the Garnet theories was that people got so used to it that they got bored of it and they didn't like it. They were like, oh, but that, you know, if Garnet's two gems, then we won't have Garnet anymore. Like, nobody had the ingredient where they actually just, it was really simple. They just want to be together. It was like, people got sick of it.
I saw people were saying like stuff about them being like mortally injured or something. They had to stay feud. There was like so many different like theories about that kind of thing. I hadn't started watching this show at that point. And so like, when I started watching, I went back and saw just all the fandom stuff and like sort of absorbed it all and all the in jokes and stuff like, fusion is a cheap tactic to me, you know, like, so this is what Homeworld thinks. There's so many in jokes and stuff like that.
It's so bizarre. Cause I remember like writing those things on a sticky note in this room and putting them up on the wall.
And now they're a thing.
Now they're like, memes. I'm like, well, that's,
I love that.
Totally bizarre. I remember when Sneeple took off for a hot second.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's nice. It's cool. I don't know. I had seen
people online saying, get yourself the snake church, and I didn't realize that that was coming from us, because I believe that
I still don't believe coming
church. From yeah. I think snake church.
I
tried to find the origin of that because I wanted to know where snake church came from, and I think it led me back to Sneeple, and I was like, oh, but that's us.
Take me to snake church.
I found it alarming.
I'm really curious that, I don't know. And that, it's, I wonder. I don't want to, I feel kind of vain too, where I'm like,
Snake Church.
No,
can't be us.
Like, no, what a huge claim to try and, I don't know. It seems impossible, but the whole thing seems impossible.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I want to talk more about this right after this, guys. So we'll be right back. Okay, so we left off talking about some fan theories, and one thing I really liked was when you guys made the short about, like, the reaction video short about Steven reacting to the crying reference. So meta. I loved that.
Well, it's because we loved, there was a very specific reaction video to Jailbreak that we just loved.
Gotcha.
Because he was so psyched.
I love watching those two, especially just the one moment. The moment when you find out Garnet's a fusion, I have so many people who I've indoctrinated into Steven. Like, I just like sitting there looking over at them like expectantly while they realize Garnet's a fusion, and then they're like, "What?" You know, that moment is what I live for. That's the whole reason that I introduced it to them in the first place, for that specific moment.
That's great. I only have so many things in my back pocket. I feel like I felt similarly about. People didn't know that Peridot was small.
Small.
And I was like, I was waiting for that. And so, like, there were, like, you know, it was a run of Peridot episodes where we could not choose an image with Peridot in it because
right.
I just really didn't want anyone to see, you know, her, see her. Without her limb enhancers. And what we pick is not always what people see anyway, but we try on our end. That one, it was true. I think Lapis, I remember the day. Ocean Gem came out. I think earlier that day, an image of Lapis got out. But I was like, oh, we made it to the day. So
we were just going strong. Yeah. It was funny. I saw the one log line I remember from like every episode of Steven Universe. That I remember one, it's catch and release. Mm-hmm. And the log line is like about, we finally see what the inside of Steven's bathroom looks like. And I was like, that's hilarious.
You're just toying with people.
That's hilarious.
Well, but it's not untrue. And that's the thing. I always want to tell the truth.
It's true.
I never want to lie.
Yeah.
I think it's fun to see the reaction for stuff like that. And like Hit the Diamond, where the episode title was, you know, Hit the Diamond. People were like, I can't believe Steven is going to personally punch Yellow Diamond in the face in this episode, you know?
I didn't even know if that one would even work. The one that surprised me was Last One Out of Beach City.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was based off a song lyric that, or a song that Ben was referencing.
And
I didn't even think about how, like, apocalyptic people that sounded. I guess, and Rising Tides, Crashing Skies, but that one was sort of, clearly sounded important, but.
Tongue in cheek, yeah. The Last One Out of Beach City, I think that people were so happy with just the entire episode that it didn't matter. They were like, this is, you know, Beach City world ending, that's one thing, but, you know, Pearl wearing a jacket, that's what I live for. Honestly, that's what I wake up in the morning for.
I was super excited because Mike Kroll is a friend of mine, and I just love I love his music, but I also love those two songs, and I really wanted a chance to like to animate stuff to them.
Yeah.
And especially 15 minutes, I just really, it's really,
that's
like
really
it.
Cool. Yeah. I see a lot of the time, when I look at the animatics and stuff, that I see that you guys use other songs to animate too. And then you change it out and you make, with the, like you make an original soundtrack. So it must've been crazy, like for that episode in particular, using the song to animate it. And then you knew that that was actually going to be.
Yeah. It's always preferable. I mean, I think it was more like, you know, when we do demos, because then we're timing things out the way we want them to be, knowing that it's final. And when we temp stuff in, it's because we want the general feeling, and we, you know, we want things to hit on a certain beat. And I think it's always better when we're doing stuff to music, because that's just such a traditional way to make cartoons. I mean, with a click track with music, it's
AMVs.
Like much. I'm talking about like Looney Tunes.
Yes, I get what you're saying. Looney Tunes and AMVs when.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, super, super early cartoons were basically advertisements for popular music. And that's what makes them so exciting, I think, still to watch, because they're so driven by that music. I love, like, one of my favorite cartoons of all time is the Fleischer Betty Boop Snow White, which is just awesome. It's so good. And there's a point where Coco the Clown kind of turns inside out into this ghost that is rotoscoped to Cab Calloway's dancing. And they sing St. James Infirmary while Betty Boop's being carried away in a glass coffin. And it's just, the sequence is just awesome. I remember the first time I saw it, I was blown away. Because it's so cool looking. And I'd never thought of using rotoscoping it with a character that looks so inhuman. So it has this really interesting effect. Anyway, I love that cartoon. I recommend it. I also love Betty Boop MD. That one's really strange. We actually kind of referenced that one in Adventures in Light Distortion, because there's a point where everyone shrinks down small and gets really tall.
Yeah.
And they're all taking this medicine that's like doing horrible things to them. Gotcha. But it's also like a placebo. And it's the cartoon is very strange. But it just ends with everybody changing and changing and changing, and old people turning young and young people turning old, and it's chaos. It's really
cool. Yeah, that Adventures in Light Distortion, that was a wild ride. But it was fun. I like that. There's one of the big things that a lot of fans talk about with, and I'm, you know, you talk about this to no end, is just the representation in the show. I think it's something that it was one of the interviews you said, like, you didn't expect the, you know, just how ready people were for that kind of thing, and that people were like, this is what I've been looking for, you know, like, this is what I've been waiting to see in a cartoon, is, you know, LGBT and like different body types, and, you know, there's lots of female representation, things like that. Was that like baked into the show when you from the outset, or what was the,
I mean, it was, because the show is about Steven and growing up. I think I didn't really realize it at the beginning necessarily. I mean, one of the things I think always with my work, I've never really done anything autobiographical. I would avoid really writing about myself. And I think even going into this cartoon, it's like, I want to write about someone that I'll always want to write about, that I'll always love. And it's, it's you, but it wasn't me. You know, I wanted it to be you, because I feel like I'd always, you know, I'd always been able to sort of hang out with Steven, hang out with you and be myself and not have that feel strange. And that wasn't really true around almost everyone else. You know, it was, that's something that I could do at home, hanging out with you and only my very, very close friends. And I think because the show was about that, and because that had so much to do with why I didn't really feel like I could trust everybody, It's part of the show, and it's part of how, you know, my life has felt. But because I wanted to focus on only the positive, it's everything positive, because that's my relationship with you.
Yeah, and I think you always put a lot of emphasis on the idea that everything in the show had to be truthful, had to come from a place of honesty. And I think that kind of representation and that kind of positivity is something that we feel is very true. It's not something we're, you know, just putting in there because, or, you know, like as an outside thing we're trying to insert into the show. That's part of the truth of our lives and the way we see the world. And so it's that's a sincerity that's coming into the show. To not have that would be lying, and that's something we avoid.
Yeah, I think early on in terms of cartoons, but also just who we were as people. Like when the crew was coming together, I wasn't looking for people who were coming from the same place as me, even in terms of the kind of cartoons they liked. And I wanted the characters to be flexible enough to look totally different when different people drew them. And to be a pastiche of things that we all liked for radically different reasons. And I think it was true, not just in terms of the art we liked, but also just what our experience of childhood was like and why the art we liked related to that, which sort of brings me back to what I was saying earlier. But I think often you're drawn to art that resonates with you for a reason. And because we all had different reasons, I mean, the show was like a way to just learn so much about the people I was working with and now the people who are watching it, who it's resonating with, but then also just us. I have a thing where when I start a project, I always want to learn something about myself by the time I'm done. So I'll often tackle something that I'm not 100% sure I really know the answer to. That's been true sort of everything I've done. Like my film I did in college is sort of about being afraid to be alone.
So it's just like challenging yourself, yeah, to...
Yeah, and trying to, I think, sort of like writing like a 5-paragraph essay, like you finish it and then you can go back mm-hmm. and sort of readjust your thesis to be what you've realized over the course of writing it, right. Except that I can't do that at all. Yeah, well, I just have to charge
you just
ahead.
You gotta go with it.
Something like this, I mean, growth is so ingrained into the show, both what the show is about, but also making the show. I think, you know, you aren't the person you were when we did season one. I'm definitely not. I don't think we could make a season one episode anymore, not just because, you know, we wouldn't want to, but because I don't think, I think we've changed too much to make those same decisions.
Right.
And yeah, that's part of what being part of this crew has been, is also like growing together and growing from each other's influence. And the show as it is now is the byproduct of that collaborative growth, which is perfect because it's such a mirror to what is happening in the show.
Right, with Steve.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was very by design because I thought if this is a show where we can all learn and grow, the show itself has to be flexible and the show itself should be about growth.
Yeah.
It has been.
Yeah, and that's why it's always been important to have a crew of people who are coming from such different places, because you can only really grow when you have voices that are that unlike your own, that
right.
yeah,
know
you can learn
things
from
that
each other.
You don't know
yeah.
and can, you know, give you different opinions and a different viewpoint on things.
Mm-hmm. It's so crucial. The whole thing's been about growing up.
Yeah. I think that's brilliant. I think that, like, it shows so much in the show, like, that you guys have grown as artists and that, you know, you're sort of growing alongside Steven, and all the characters are experiencing change. You know, Pearl's definitely not as she was in season one, and Amethyst and Garnet and all of them. I think that's, you know, I think that's great. I love that so much. Thank you guys so much for coming and being on the podcast. I just appreciate it so much.
Of course.
Yeah,
thank you for
yeah.
having us on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much to Rebecca and Steven for joining me today, and make sure to join me next Thursday for Zach Callison and Grace Rolick, who voice Connie and Steven on this show. If you guys have any questions for me, for Rebecca, or anything about the show in general, make sure to hit us up on Twitter. You can find me at MK Atwood, or you can ask the official Cartoon Network Twitter, and make sure to use the hashtag Steven Universe Podcast. And please be sure to subscribe to the Steven Universe Podcast at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. I'm Kinsey Atwood, and I will see you next Thursday.